Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
I know what you're going to do. Should we just get it over?
I like the innate mischief of you thinking I'm going to do something even when I'm not.
Hello and welcome to no.
No. Hello
and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we are talking about the biggest issue dominating the beautiful game today: socks, and why are players cutting holes in them. We'll also discuss Arsenal penalty shootout triumph against Porto and remember some of the dramatic stories that we've never had published during our careers. And there'll be some chat about the Bournemouth-Luton thriller and this weekend's FA Cup matches. Joining me, Tom Clark, for all of that, we have the Chief Correspondent for The Times and Sunday Times, Martin Samuel, the Football Correspondent for the Sunday Times, Jonathan Northcroft, and a former footballer who's a little bit of a sentimental soul, as he used to wear his grandfather's ring on match days, taped up, holding it in the moments before kickoff while repeating positive affirmations in his head. Gregor Robertson, let's hope for some more positivity today, eh? Now,
I said in the piece, I can't believe I'm writing this.
I know, well, that's why I then read it out on a podcast.
I've got my grandfather's ring on at the moment.
We can come back to it.
Always wear my grandfather's ring.
Okay. Grandparents' jewellery later on, because we're going to come back to that revelation in Gregor's piece from his playing days later. But to the Emirates first, and Arsenal's win against Porto to reach the quarterfinals of the Champions League. I was working late editing the sports section this night, and Martin, you were at the game. Before we get into some of the specifics and the topics, it was the right result, wasn't it, on the balance of play? Arsenal were the better team in this match.
Arsenal were the better team. I'm not actually sure whether they were the better team over the two games. That's the strange thing. Because Porto executed their game plan, such as it was, and as nefarious as it was at times, they executed their game plan absolutely perfectly, really. And when you consider where Arsenal are in the Premier League at the moment, to take them to what was a 1-1 aggregate draw after 3 hours of football is probably a better achievement for Porto than it is for Arsenal. Does the best team go through? Yes, Arsenal are a better team. Does the more pleasing team go through? Undoubtedly, because, you know, there's a lot about Porto that is that was very hard to like on the night. There was a ball boy with one leg on crutches, just up from the dugout, and he showed a greater capacity to get on with the game quickly than any Porto player. At one stage, bless him, he volleyed it back onto the pitch, to keep the game going quickly. Volleyed it. The man, the lad's got one leg, and that was more urgency than Porto showed at any stage when play stopped to get play restarted again, and that was very, very frustrating, and it really frustrated Arsenal. I mean, God knows how they get on if they draw Atletico Madrid in the next round because they've got that in spades.
But on that topic though, does it not say an element of growth, Johnny, about this Arsenal team under Mikel Arteta, that they've got through this test against Porto, this Porto side that Martin's just outlined with all the kind of trickery and devilish nature that they have?
Yeah, I mean, one of the fascinating things about the tie was watching exactly that learning curve that Arsenal are going through, as every sort of, you know, pr- prime Premier League team has had to do before them. You know, famously Manchester United under Ferguson took years to master the art of the European tie and how to basically stop yourself being counterattacked and done by savvy European teams. And we you know, Wenger's Arsenal arguably never quite mastered the art. We saw Manchester City have to go through that that learning process as well. And this was watching Arsenal grow before your eyes, and it was a struggle for them at times. They held their nerve. I thought that the goal was just absolutely a wonderful goal, but also a wonderful testament to patience, really, Odegaard's patience in holding the ball and making the run and it coming late in the half. That's the kind of thing you sort of need to be able to do. But then there was a lot to endure. As we've been saying, Porto had all the dark arts. Then Pepe, which I'll miss him from the competition.
Yeah,
I mean,
to watch, isn't
he? I know. Having at least Diego Simeone is still there, but you know, he was a joy to behold, to be quite honest. You know, as someone that's nearly as old as him, just watching the athleticism that he musters.
41
and yeah, yeah, 41. Just amazing. So, and then to prevail with a penalty shootout at the end, having all that pressure on them, I thought it was another marker in how this Arsenal team's better than last year's one. And I know there's an argument that if you're in a title race, sometimes it's good to go out of Europe and blah blah blah. I've never bought into that.
No.
You know, City showed it last year. Winning is winning. You roll on. You maintain that pitch of competitiveness. So I think if Arsenal had gone out of the Champions League as well, that would have actually negatively affected their title challenges.
I agree that we saw the growth, and we kind of almost saw it during the course of that match. But the biggest stride comes from going through, from prevailing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Mm.
So and ultimately that was on a very fine margin at the end, obviously. Mm. The only player who really, Odegaard was outstanding, wasn't he?
He was.
He's the only player who really looked like he was capable of unlocking defence.
It's interesting talking on Monday about that kind of virtual reality headset thing and playing it at greater speed. I had a couple of listeners get in touch whilst watching that game and afterwards going, it makes so much more sense now that Alisson said that. Because that was exactly it for the goal as well, wasn't it, Johnny? Yeah. That patience that you talk about. But he was super.
The little shuffle of the feet and then just the kind of pause and perfect weight of the pass. That was the first time that either winger got inside the fullback. Fullbacks were outstanding, Wendell and João Mario. And that was the first time that they really got in between a centre-half and fullback. You know, you're going to get heat maps. Now you get these passing kind of maps as well in games. And Arsenal's in this game, I was looking at some analysis this morning, it's the shape of a horseshoe because they just kept moving the ball. They had to keep moving the ball around. They couldn't get through the 4-5, and obviously the one up front. They couldn't get through that block. Just kept having to try and recycle the ball. And it's a remarkable graphic. But that's testimony to Porto as well. It's, you know, there's different ways of playing football, and this is a thing that you encounter in Europe. And that point Martin made about Atletico, after watching Atletico last night as well, not just because of there's some parallels in the way they'll play, but also because of seeing that stadium and like all the growth that Arsenal, you know, they're experiencing just now. Crikey, they'll need it if they have to go there, and they've got a real kind of hostile crowd behind them. Because the Emirates seemed—I mean, you'll be able to say better than me—but it seemed edgy. It seemed a bit nervous.
Mate, it was.
It's nervous. The Wanda Metropolitano, it just gets more hostile and more kind of like riled up. It's, despite them having to still find a goal, that's the difference. There's still kind of doubts, whereas at Atletico, there's like, I don't know, a drive right into the last moment. Yeah.
Arsenal, it's nerves. It's fury. They haven't been this way for a very long time.
Yeah, that's understandable.
You've got to remember, of all the groups, of all the teams that are left in the tournament now, the one that is longest out of the quarter-final stage is Arsenal, because PSV went out last night. So it's Arsenal are the relative new boys as such. And so they're going to need to keep their wits about them. I do think sometimes, look, I'm very much, you know, I'm not saying I like long ball football, but I appreciate that long ball football exists. You've got to find a way of beating it. You've got to find a way of beating all of these different ways of playing. And if everyone wanted to play like Manchester City or everyone wanted to play like Arsenal, it would be a very dull game. So I totally get that. I do think sometimes that we look at some of this and we go, oh, yeah, but you've got to get past it. You've got to get, you know, and this is what European football's all about. When and not enough times do we actually go, no, this is just straight up cheating and it's no good. And, you know, what they're doing there, you know, you've bumped your elbow on the post, mate. You don't need to fall to the floor when you've done that. No one who ever got an elbow injury needs to collapse, basically, you know.
We also, having said that, we also forget that we see that in the Premier League.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, I'm not saying that, but it was very, very noticeable the other night. And it massively frustrated the crowd because they haven't, you know, well, I was going to say they haven't seen it for a while, but actually they saw it with Brentford. But they haven't seen it to that level for a while because, you know, Brentford do it, but funnily enough, Porto are a better team than Brentford. So, Porto do it better than Brentford, really.
Do you think we have a kind of like expectation that because it's the Champions League, we get a bit funny about the idea of this disparity? So there's a lesser team, so you might have to lean on your gamesmanship a bit more. So that's why we don't judge Brentford so harshly.
Because we know that they're...
You're like, hang on, you're supposed to be in the Champions League, old boy.
Well, you do look at the... But at the same time, I was looking at the quality of Porto and thinking... You could maybe take this game to Arsenal a little bit more, just playing football, because they've got, as Gregor identified there, they've got some lovely footballers. They really have.
I think what you get, though, is it's a combination between gamesmanship, if you want to call it that, dark arts, and technical excellence. These teams are still technically brilliant.
Really good. You're a little bit disappointed, almost. Why are you doing that for? Play them. You're actually good.
But they got them to penalties. I suppose if you're being really pragmatic, that was probably the best they could have done over the tie. And Atletico, you know, that's Porto, but with Antoine Griezmann. And I don't know if you saw his pass last night. I think Riquelme skied it, but that was as good as Odegaard's pass, if not better. And the way
and you could watch them in the second half and think the same thing, because they had to go for it and they were like they were blown into their way.
Yeah.
But they set up; they'll always start a game with the same sort of conservative. That's just a different viewpoint of how to win a game.
Yeah.
That's just fine. But they do have the quality.
Yeah,
they do have it. So in those moments, those kind of little breakaways or those little clutch moments, they can win the game.
I'll come back to the Arteta, you know, Simeone potential battle that we seem to be excitedly teeing up. And if you're listening to this on Friday afternoon, then you might know that they've not got Atletico at all.
We'll be pleased about that.
On David Raya, after Monday's show, where I extolled the virtues of Aaron Ramsdale's brilliant shot stopping, he stepped up and proved me wrong with two great saves.
Well, he didn't prove you wrong, did he? I mean, Ramsdale saves are still Ramsdale saves, and they were very
Thank
good.
You, Martin. That's the nicest thing you've said to me all season. but on David Raya, it slightly fits that theme that what you were talking about of Arsenal getting through. It's a moment where, you know, Ramsdale had that moment against Brentford. Raya doubts about him at various different points in the season. In the clutch moment, as you say, Gregor, steps up and saves penalties. That's a big thing for this Arsenal team as they edge towards these big moments into March. The keeper they've signed had a penalty shootout, made the decisive saves, Johnny.
Huge for Arteta as well, the vindication. I think we love Rams, though. We don't, you know, Rams has got this great backstory of a lad that's battled his way up through adversity, but so is David Raya. And we sometimes forget with foreign players that they may have had it even harder than some of the British lads that we extol. You know, David Raya's done his hard yards in the Championship. I still can't get my mind around what it would have been like from turning up at Blackburn at the age of 17 or whatever, miles from home and trying to make it through the academy there. And I think all that mental strength and personality is why Arsenal signed him, ultimately. The goalkeeping coach knew him very well. And when Arteta looked at what went wrong last season, looked at maybe just that element of character that went missing in the title running, and David Raya was part of the solution for that. So for that to now start to manifest itself at this stage of the season, it couldn't have been planned better by Arsenal.
Yeah, and you talk about vindication for Arteta. On the Arsenal manager himself, in relation to some of these clutch moments, he got booked on the night on the touchline. You know, the kind of he does whip up this slight frenzy, and Gregor, you talk about that slight tension in the crowd. You wonder whether some of it comes from him in these key moments. Is he still not quite cool enough, Martin? You know, you were there watching, and is he still not quite composed enough?
No, I don't mind that side. I think both coaches got booked.
Yeah. And then had a bit of a clash at the end as well. I'm just trying to tap into this idea that maybe...
I don't find that. If you look at the three guys that are going for the title, neither of them have ever been mistaken for a fortnight's holiday in Benidorm when it's not going their way, really, have they? Let's be honest. Pep and Jurgen Klopp and Mikel Arteta, they're wound up, they're on the touchline. That's why it takes it out of them. That's why Jurgen Klopp has decided... He can't keep, giving him of himself to Liverpool for any longer. He's done. And that's all part of it. I'm not saying that at times people don't go over the top a little bit. Certainly some of the confrontations with referees. At the same time, I trust a guy that looks engaged with it more than that weird Rafa Benitez thing where, you score the goal and he doesn't move and then he starts coating the right back over something that happened 15 minutes ago. I'm very sorry, if you score a goal and that's what you've worked towards your entire week, I don't know how you keep still. Fergie never did. Fergie ran on the pitch and went all silly I'm thinking, yeah, that's what I'd be like if I was him. I wouldn't be one of those fellas sitting there going, yes, stroking my chin cool. Like Dr. Evil.
Andrew's pretty cool, though.
Andrew's pretty cool, Yeah, Andrew's pretty cool. Look,
for me, it's when he gets wound up about things that are just so clearly false, like the Odegaard... Yeah. Disallowed goal where Havertz clearly had a handful of Pepe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pulled him back, and he was going like he was pointing in the screen, making this action screen, for the screen
that's what
to
he
go
got
to VR,
for, wasn't it?
Exactly.
He got booked for that.
I mean, come on.
Speaking of dark arts, I mean, Kai Havertz really needs to work on his game. Doesn't he? He's got to be one of the worst players at the dark arts. It's so obvious
so
every
obvious,
time thing
yeah.
he does anything. He needs.
He's also quit getting a bit handy with his elbows.
Yeah,
if you noticed that.
Can you get handy
I've,
with
I
your elbows?
I always thought he was.
Well, he's getting handy with
his elbows.
I always
thought he had quite a spiteful side to him, Kai Havertz. Even when he was at Chelsea and stuff.
Yeah.
I thought he was quite spiteful.
Got a little bit of him.
Anyway, he's another one who's coming good too, let's be honest.
Yes, he is. He's definitely looking good. Martin, we were talking about this idea late on Tuesday night because I was in the office and you were at the game. And you rang in after your copy had arrived saying, everything okay? Yep. And we'd finally got the paper off very, very late and we'd got all the copy on the website and things. And you said, I had another piece written, Tom.
Yeah.
Because as you headed to penalties, you didn't know which way it was going to go. And it prompted me to think that this happens all the time. This is what we have to deal with all the time. And the idea that you would head into a key moment and you've got to get not only a newspaper to the presses, but also get the copy on the website as quick as possible. And you guys are sat there hovering over your keyboard. So I thought it might be fun to just talk about moments in your career where you've had either two pieces written or you had to quickly change them. Key moments, FA Cups, cup clashes, cup finals and things. Because what was the gist of this piece going to be if Arsenal had lost? What would I have got in the office?
Well, you would have got the exact opposite of anyway. That's what you would have got. This is the sort of brinkmanship that a penalty shootout can completely. But I would have worked around what John said earlier about he thought it would have affected Arsenal had they gone out. That was my reading of it, that this is a match that you need to win. I wrote about the fact that they could win both and that they should try to win both. That if you're top of the Premier League, you are, by definition, one of the best teams in Europe. And therefore, your ambition should be in both competitions and mentioned Liverpool against Manchester City, that title race in 2019, I want to say, 2019.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that they won the Champions League that year and actually they pushed Manchester City all the way to the wire and then used that incredible form that was required to push Manchester City all the way to the final game of the season. They took that into Europe. Imagine if they'd have given up on the Barcelona tie at the halfway stage, at 3-0 down, coming out of Barcelona, We've got half a team at Anfield. Imagine if they had just said, oh, well, this one's gone. We're playing Lionel Messi. We're playing Barcelona. This one's gone. Let's focus on the league. Go out of the Champions League at the semi-final stage. Miss out on the league to Manchester City. You've got nothing. Mm. Instead, that season, that's the year that Liverpool win the European Cup under Jurgen Klopp. Yeah. It's an incredible season. Well, Arsenal have got that opportunity. You stay in. So, if they'd have got knocked out on penalties, I would have written about that. I would have written about the opportunity.
But you
lost.
Had that basically written, didn't you?
I started writing. I looked at the piece that was basically formed. It's now 25 past 10. I've got a 10:40 deadline. I looked at the piece that was basically formed that had been written largely thinking Arsenal are going to get over the line here, either in extra time or at the end of the second half, or in penalties, you can never be sure. But I had, so there was a piece that was written all but one paragraph. Mm. And the one paragraph was going to be that last bit about the penalty shootout. So I'm thinking, but if they get beat on penalties, I've got a minute.
Yeah.
And I've got to destroy this piece and and find something else. And so the second half of extra time was spent with one eye on the match and writing what's called a top. For those at home, I'm sure you can work out what that is. So it's the 350 word. It was about 350, 400 word. Top of the piece, the intro, written on the basis that Arsenal had lost the penalty shootout, but obviously not referring to the penalty shootout because it hasn't taken place, but writing about the potential ramifications of it, because then you can finesse that in about 2 minutes.
And that's
the job, and the phrase too busy writing about the match to watch it. That's what a night match can be sometimes. You're almost too busy, right? And people go, were you at the game? Oh, yeah, I was at the game. But
not
not the same game that you were at, because you could watch all it all without sitting there thinking, oh, the Wi-Fi connection's just gone down. What's going to happen now?
Johnny, happy memories about rewrites? I say happy, that's the wrong word, isn't it? Late drama.
Well, I mean, the rewrites are one thing, I suppose. But then I think what Martin's talking about is the win-lose scenario.
Rewrites.
I didn't mean rewrites. I mean that thing that you and I had in the office when England were going into that penalty shootout against Italy. Mm. And we had two different screens. One was England win with different pictures ready. Yeah. And one was England lose with loads of different pictures of Chiellini pulling people and heartbreak for Southgate, etc., etc. It's very sad I had to push the wrong button. But Johnny...
And this is maybe something that will become a thing of the past as we move towards ever more digital, and then you've got a lot more nimbleness and flexibility when you've got a 24-hour.
Still need to be quick though.
You still need to be quick, but digital gives you the chance to, you know, then start to, I guess, work through the night and use that to put in all the different furniture and bits of features that you need. But this makes me think of the old days of completely pre-digital, and that's sadly being as old as I am most of my career. And I think it particularly affected Sunday newspapers as well, because the idea of the Sunday edition traditionally was always, this is a definitive read. This is not just, you know, reporting on what happened on Saturday. This is telling you the story of the week. This is something weighty. So what that would mean is if you had a big game on a Saturday, you not just had to have a kind of different report in mind depending on the result, but you'd have an entire spread of features, sometimes two spreads of features, depending on what the result was, and then those features had to kind of give the reader the impression that we have spoken, this is a definitive story here, you know, when in reality it might have been a knife edge. And go back to 2019, I did have a look at some of the ones I've done over the years. And I had to prepare for 2019, that Champions League final, a win and a lose scenario from a Liverpool perspective. And I wrote, absolutely, you know, hard-hitting, excoriating piece about what a loser Jurgen Klopp was for losing to Spurs. Not that I thought it would happen, but you have to imagine if...
Just in case, if they get beat by Tottenham, which... Because he hasn't played many finals that he's expected to win, so, but he was expected to win that one.
Spot on, it would have been a seventh consecutive defeat in a final. And so my whole kind of lose scenario piece was based on, look at, you know, it did say, well, this is wonderful manager, gives everyone a great ride. But ultimately, you know, he's got 97 points, but he hasn't won the league. And he's now managed to lose to Tottenham in a Champions League final. You know, he's a great manager, but he's got to stop being the lovable loser. That was the whole thrust of my...
Never saw the light of day.
Instead of which, there was some piece about him being the greatest thing in the world, and this, you know, this was never in doubt, and it shows that Liverpool are back and all that sort of stuff. But that's what you have to... That's what you have to do.
Martin, were you there in 99, the United Bayern Munich?
Yeah, I was.
How was that?
Right, well, I thought I was. It was a car crash. Because in 99, what happened was, that went from, in the space of 2 minutes, that went from poor old Fergie gets his tactics wrapped round his neck and blows the treble to arise Sir Alex, for you're surely the greatest genius that football has ever produced. And that happened in the space of 2 minutes, because you've got to remember, until they win that game, Bayern Munich are a better team, and Fergie's made a couple of tactical decisions that haven't really come off. And you know, Henry always says that Alex said to him, sorry, the first editions or whatever. I don't know if that's true.
That's a story I've heard as well.
But Henry always says that Alex said to him, I saw your first editions. Well, yeah, mate, but you would have written the same thing
Just to explain that, because of the first edition timings, quite often you might have to send something that's essentially a little bit cobbled together, because basically what you'd have written in that scenario was, they're crap, they've lost it, they've thrown it away.
However, that was the match for, you know, that was one of those matches for which the phrase "however later" is invented, you know. However later, you know, the complete opposite to what you're reading happened.
Yeah.
I can remember they equalised. I don't know if we're allowed to use bad language on this podcast.
Yeah, I've been swearing loads lately.
We have already. And I was on the phone to the office to say, right, what do we do now? They've just equalised at 1-1. What do we do now? Are we... You know, because that's the other thing. With some newspapers that really haven't got a sensibility for football, and the paper I was with at that time cared a lot more about money than it did about football. And there was always that fear that you were going to have to send a match report that appeared with a scoreline that said extra time being played, which is just what you want to read at 9 o'clock the following morning. And so it was like, what are we doing with this? And while I was on the phone to the office, they scored the second one. And all I can remember saying, apologise for
Go
the language,
for
is fuck me. And just repeating it.
That should have been your intro.
And just, yeah, well, it nearly was. I mean, I was thinking, well, that could be the intro. But I was just repeating that phrase several times, because... It was the moment, there's no other way to describe it.
And so how long did you then have between 2-1 Solskjaer, and Solskjaer has won it?
And Solskjaer has won it as quick as you could do it. Yeah. So, I mean, within 2 or 3 minutes, you just had to write 4 paragraphs at the top that said it, and then sit down, and I was starting the rewrite, and to his eternal credit, I was sitting next to Rob Shepherd, who I went to school with, and we've known each other for a very, very long time, Shep and I. And I'm starting the rewrite, and he just got hold of my arm, and he went, just stop. He went, just look around. He said, you'll never see anything like this again. And he was a little shiver thinking about it, because Shep ain't in the industry anymore. And I did. I sat there. And I just like looked around the new camp and looking at the pitch and taking it all in, and that couple of minutes, and then I started writing again because you had no option. You haven't got any option of trying to enjoy it or whatever. I can remember doing it when Liverpool did the when they won every cup. You know that season,
the
Julia.
Julia, yeah, 2001.
Alaves,
well, the treble, yeah, the treble, yeah, beat Alaves, yeah. And I can remember doing it then and just stopping for a minute and just listening to You'll Never Walk Alone echoing around the stage. It was remarkable.
Any sub-editors listening to this would be going, you're sat there, not bloody writing.
Yeah, but it then improves the rewind. It then improves the rewind because you've got a little bit of time.
Yeah.
You've got a little bit of time with the rewind. Not much, but you've got a little bit. And then it improves the rewrite. You're not just...
Yeah, you've got a bit of colour of
A bit of colour. You've got a bit of feeling for it as well. You've got a little bit of feeling for it, seeing how... Because that was a remarkable season, that Liverpool season. Doesn't really... Because City have done the treble and United have done the treble. They've done that real treble that we talk about. But to win every single cup competition you entered, as Liverpool did that season... They have played every match it is possible to play. There's not so when your Liverpool diary comes out and it's got the fixtures in it, there is no fixture they could have played that they haven't played. It's a remarkable achievement.
I don't know about you, Martin, but I always find, and you certainly used to find that I kind of tie myself in psychologicals because there's a result you want to happen, but. You're kind of against deadline and you've already written your report. So you start like hoping the team that you like doesn't score a goal and ruin my report.
Yeah.
I remember doing that in Euro 96 for my first tournament. I was working for Scotland on Sunday and we were a poor paper. We didn't have money to buy an ISDN line. You'll know what that is.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
So that would be a permanent phone line in a press box that a paper's got to pay a few hundred quid to hire for the day. So we didn't have the resources to do that. So... The solution was that I was told you can use the payphones inside Wembley to file your report. And I was doing the colour piece from Scotland versus England, the Gaza game. Yeah. And I was quite lucky because I'd chosen Gary McAllister as a subject right off the bat. And of course, Gary missed the penalty. And then I had to leave with about 15 minutes to go to race down to find a payphone. And I found myself standing on this payphone thinking, I hope Scotland don't score. I
mean, John.
I know, but you do. Because it was otherwise I'd have got sacked. You're terrified. And I got this nice Gary McAllister piece, score.
Yeah. You know those Viz top tips?
Yeah.
Where sellotape Rice Krispies to the soles of your feet to get the real gravel of the effect of having a real gravel drive or whatever and stuff like that. I always thought, top tips, football clubs, why not do everything that you're going to do in the last 10 minutes? Why not do that in the first half? And then I don't have to tear all my hair out in around about the 85th minute when you suddenly do it then. It's just... But you get the one I was telling you about... Liverpool versus Borussia Dortmund. And I don't know why English clubs, I don't know if foreign journalists have this quite the same, because it's something about English football clubs where they never actually realise you've got beat, now just pack it in. Give up, trying to come back. Last night, Bournemouth versus Luton.
Yeah.
3-0 to Luton. Everyone, all the lads are sitting there going, right, well, this is nice and easy. Might even have a cup of tea at half time, Unusual. 4-3 Bournemouth, I don't know. That happens everywhere. But
this was another 4-3, wasn't it? 2016.
Yeah, 2016. So it's Jurgen Klopp's first season. And they are drawn against Borussia Dortmund. And... It's at Anfield, and it was the first night you really saw that fabulous connection between Klopp and Anfield itself in a European game. It was absolutely flying. And
I've got the scores here.
It goes 2-0 to Dortmund and 3-1.
10 minutes, which was 3-1 on aggregate.
And then goes 3-1 to Dortmund.
So that's 3-1. Divock Origi got one back on the 48th, but Royce then scored 57.
Yeah.
Tie over. Right, half tie, an hour left. Over.
So... With half an hour to go, Liverpool need 3 goals against what everyone thought at the time was one of the best teams in Europe. And I'm doing the piece, and the piece, I can remember the theme of the piece, and the piece was about emotion and passion and all of these wonderful things that Jurgen Klopp engenders, and that sometimes... it's just not enough, and it's about
too much passion.
It's not too much, but just that sometimes quality outs, and everyone wanting it and everyone, you know, being on your side and it all being very emotional, sometimes that doesn't get you over the line. And then they get a goal back and you're thinking, well, I still need another two and this is going nowhere. And, you know, then they get another one back and you're thinking, oh. A little bit tricky, this, and but you sort of, you know, if Dortmund hold on to it, the piece still hold anyway. Liverpool win, and they win very, very late. And
90th minute, Dejan Lovren.
Yeah, but I think that might even be a 90th minute. 90 it's plus. Actually 90 plus. Mm. You know, it's super late, and you're looking at this and thinking, there's no way out. I've got absolutely no way out. And the only way out was quite literally to just reverse everything you've written.
Yeah.
Just reverse everything you've written. So it was, sometimes, you know, passion can get you...
Is it enough?
Is it enough? Sometimes it's not emotion, about quality. It's all about emotion. Quality, who cares about quality? And it was literally that. And I know the guy that was sitting in the office went, I can't believe you did it like that. I went, but I had no choice. And then there's a rewrite, and then you can take a more considered view. But Geoffrey Green, who was a very, very great writer on this newspaper, had a saying, had a phrase, and it holds true to this day. If you can't write a good piece, write a bad one. Because sometimes they just, you know, you just need something in that moment, and then We'll finesse it later.
Speaking from the point of view of an editor, I couldn't agree more.
So I'm very apologetic to everyone in Cornwall and the Outer Hebrides and all the people that get the first edition, the very early edition, because sometimes you'll be reading some right old rubbish. Simply because, try and do it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody who thinks they can do it, try and do it with 2 minutes to go, and you've got to find a way of writing something that sums up the complete opposite.
I'm at West Ham Freiburg tonight.
Yeah, which again, it
needs to be
game.
Played to conclusion. And guess what I'm most pleased about? It's a 5:45
kickoff.
There
you go.
And let me tell you what all the editors are most pleased about. That it's a 5:45 kickoff because Gregor Robertson has many qualities, but filing copy on time is not one of them. The amount of times I've rang you up and gone, mate, we just need some words.
Just need some words.
I'm not actually bothered what they are.
I hope I get quicker with the advancement of my years, but.
need some words now. But I only want to mention it very briefly because we need to rattle on because we need to talk about socks at some point, don't we, Greg?
Of course.
But Martin, you mentioned it there. Another great example of this kind of toing and throwing. Luton Bournemouth last night.
Yeah.
Just in terms of what this very briefly what this says about these two teams, I want to talk briefly about Andoni Iraola. Gregor, it's an incredibly impressive job he's done with Bournemouth, isn't it? From the point of view where I can remember sitting in this studio early in the season, me speculating like a mischievous presenter that I am, that he should be ready for the sack.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that when you heard the boos ringing out after the third Luton goal went in, I'm sure there would be some people questioning him again. But it's been a great turnaround, and all kind of, you know, underlined by all the kind of things that Bournemouth hired him for too, in terms of the attack games. It doesn't matter who the opponent is, they go out to try and win it. They play on the front foot, and that's why they hired them. That's, you know, there was a lot said about getting rid of Gary O'Neill, and you can still say things about that.
Understandably,
you can still question that decision.
The man's done, yeah.
But the reason that they hired him was because they wanted to aspire to something more than just survival, and they wanted to play a certain kind of brand of football, and he's delivered on that.
Yeah.
And it was a thrilling comeback.
Probably the end for Luton, isn't it?
No, it's not the end.
Not the end, but it's a sign that
it's a big blow. Look, and as Hamza wrote in his report, it's about how they recover for that now when they've got Nottingham Forest at the weekend, a club who, you know, could help decide their fate. Obviously, potential points deduction coming down the line. They're not dead and buried, but the kind of optic and the feeling that we had a few weeks ago that they're going to do it, it's kind of been eroded now, and we're back to reality and how monumental an achievement it would be for them to do it. Mm. So I'm still not writing them off.
No, but as you say, a huge game this weekend against Nottingham Forest, which I'm sure we will talk about on Monday's show. I hope you enjoyed that, listeners, insight into our little journalistic world that we live in. And as Martin said, if you think you can do it, write us a match report and send it to me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk.
Oh my word.
I'll read some of them out on next week's show. But if you stick with us, because next we are talking all about socks.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Tom Clark, and today I'm joined by Jonathan Northcroft, Martin Samuel and Gregor Robertson. Well, in the first half of the show, we were giving you an insight into journalistic practices, and here's another one. Sometimes me and the editors sit around in a room drumming our hands on the table, like Martin Samuel often does on this podcast to try and wind me up, trying to think of ideas. What the hell can we get them to write about? And someone piped up, why the hell do footballers cut holes in their socks? It's my colleague Joe. And we thought, yeah, why the hell do they do it? And it sparked a massive conversation, all the editors in the Times office, and I thought, I know they're just the guy for the job for this. I know just the guy to find out the answers to the biggest question in football. Gregor Robertson, tell us all about it. Why do they cut holes in their socks?
Yeah, I was initially a bit sceptical when you gave me this idea.
I think your answer was, really?
I have to do it. I think I said I have to do it as a bit of a giggle.
Yeah, you said, well, I encouraged it. I said it should absolutely be a giggle.
I don't know. I wasn't going to start ringing people up and saying, you know, doing a deep dive on socks. Anyway, of all the things I've written, there's not been many with a bigger response, I have to say.
I don't know what that says about my journalism. It's the biggest issue in football.
It's something that clearly a lot of people, like one former colleague sent a picture of his 9-year-old kid this morning. With holes in his socks and cut-off socks. And
yeah, well, as I say, This is another insight into it. Joe was in conference where all the editors talk about the stories of the day yesterday and talked about it, and the comment editor came over to him afterwards and said, yeah, the bloody nightmare, every time I do the washing, me and my wife are picking out bits of socks.
Roland came over this morning.
Finally, someone's getting to the bottom
of
this.
Yeah, meaty issues, yeah.
But anyway, so go on, try and answer the why.
Okay, so there's also various sort of cutting up of socks, but the latest trend is these holes. Yeah, they're either big holes in the calf, over the calf, or like lots of tiny little incisions all over the sock, and that apparently is because some players feel that their socks are too tight and it's sort of to release pressure and tension. Or that was the original thought. Gareth Bale did it back in 2016 when he had a recurring sort of calf muscle injury. I think he had 6 in the space of a couple of seasons at Real Madrid. And when he did that, then suddenly, you know, the Spanish newspapers started ringing up medical experts and trying to find out if there was any science behind this. And there's none. There is no science behind this. In fact,
so is it just
the opposite is true, in that compression is like used as a recovery tool. You'll often see players putting on a pair of tights or a pair of big pull-up socks after a game because it helps blood circulation and recovery. So, you know, there's no science behind this. But as I said in the piece, that almost doesn't matter. It's like, if it makes the player feel better, then they'll give it a go. It's like comfort, and it's often in your head. So there's also kind of element of superstition about these things too. So Kyle Walker said he tried it, and he played well for a couple of games, and he thought, you know what, I'm going to stick with this.
Yeah.
And I referenced quite a lot of instances of superstition to do with Kit in this piece.
Tell us more.
Well, one, I'd reference one with the motivational speaker called Jack Black visited our Nottingham Forest Academy team many years ago. And he delivered lots of things. I remember he would do things like he'd get a player up front and he'd ask them to hold their arms out really tense and he'd pull on it and then he'd put a fag in their mouth and he'd pull on it and your strength completely went away. It was all these things about the power of the mind. Mm. Or he would say, take a drink of fizzy juice and you would lose strength. And the guys couldn't help it. It was like, he was, as I say, demonstrating the power of the mind. Yeah. So one of these things he said was, you should wear a vest with, and before a game, just with your finger, just write the word win 3 times on your vest and wear it under your strip. So if you've all got that on the match day, then you're looking around and one lad took him too literally, and before our next game came in with a vest with win written on marker pen 3 times. Black marker pen.
Did you win?
I don't remember that at all. Probably, we were quite good. So all I'm saying is Kit, there's not many things that you can individualise as a footballer because you're all wearing a uniform. There are not many things that you can make your own and put your own mark on. And there are not many things that you can use and make them kind of lucky either.
So is that where the grandfather's ring that I mentioned in the intro, that's where that came from?
Yeah, it was my grandfather's wedding ring, in fact. And when in the days when you were allowed to wear jewellery, I would tape it up. And just before kickoff, I would just hold it with the other hand. And look, players do these things. They sort of just like positive mental thinking, affirmations. And
but the other big sock one is cutting the bottom off your sock, right?
Yeah.
Which is what you did more in your playing days.
I did, yeah. It was kind of...
You got a bollocking from the kit man a couple of times.
Yeah, because obviously, I wasn't playing for Chelsea. I was playing for Chesterfield. And when everyone's cutting up their socks every week, it was putting a dent in their bank balance. So they threatened to
so
make
you would get new. You just get a new sock. You cut the bottom off because and you get a new sock
I said
and cut
this,
it off every
as
single
I said
time.
In this, you, if you put them in the laundry and they come out and like these, there's big ladders up them, they go all rough and they fall apart, and it was like you don't want to wear them again, so you cut a new pair every week, and the kit man was tearing his hair out. But that was because you train in ankle socks during the week and you want to. And then if come match day, you're putting on a different pair of socks that were like thinner, more synthetic, your foot would slide around in the boot, there was a different thickness, it just felt different. So it was like, again, it's in your mind, you just want everything to feel right. So everyone started wearing socks, cutting them off and wrapping a bit of tape around the bottom, a la Cristiano Ronaldo was the guy who popularised that one. So it all sounds like it means nothing, but as I kind of referenced in the piece, it's just any little thing. You want to make sure you feel as prepared as you can possibly be. Everything is right when you get on, when you step on the pitch. And then there is also undoubtedly an element in this of a kind of trend. Like probably, as I say, like the 9-year-old kid sees Jude Bellingham cutting his socks up, but probably, Anthony Gordon sees, who's another player I noticed the other day who's doing it, sees some of the biggest players in the world and thinks, I'm one of them, I'll do that, I'll give that a try. And so it's about as well, I've said confidence and sort of self-appearance and appearance are like close bedfellows. They always have been. You want to feel they look good when you go on the pitch too.
Absolutely.
So who knows? Who knew you could get 1,500 words or whatever out of socks, eh?
Yeah, I'm in, honestly. And I enjoyed every single word.
I mean, I used to cut holes in my shorts when I played, but it didn't go down the same way, and I got arrested.
That's a story for another day. Exactly. But you talk about confidence, Gregor, and, appearance and being prepared. This piece did spark some slightly interesting reaction from Times subscribers, which I do want to talk about because it's a conversation that I've always found quite interesting, with some Times readers saying that it's simply down to footballers being stupid, which I've never really taken on board as an idea that all footballers are stupid, but it is something that is trotted out in society, isn't it, that footballers are stupid. Who wants to go first on
one
this?
One of the things, dear England...
Are you going to talk about your shorts again?
No, I'm not.
Okay, thank God.
But the when I went to see Dear England, everyone raved about Dear England. I like Dear England, the play and everything. But there is a little bit off in that laughing at Harry Kane and his dopey accent and the fact he doesn't seem very bright and stuff like that. And And he sort of made a little bit of a figure of fun. And and when I came away from it, and I get what the play's about and the points it's making and everything like that. But I did sit there and think, no, actually, he's not really like that. He doesn't sound as if he could be the professor of cunning at Oxford University. But he's, you know, it's like David Beckham thing. Oh, he's a thick David Beckham. Gazza's just thick. Gazza's not thick. The reason Gazza has suffered from mental illness is that he knew he wasn't happy. And I've always thought that you know, there's a degree of degree of self-awareness in people that are depressed about the world or depressed about their own lives or whatever. It shows a degree of self-awareness. He's not sitting there with a silly grin on his face, you know, chuckling away to himself. Plus, you know, footballers with degrees. I know footballers that can speak Russian. I know, you know.
Well, that's another thing that always gets me, the language thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Footballers go around the world, learn three languages, and I can't remember whether to say grazie or gracias when I'm on holiday.
Yeah, absolutely.
The level of science and analysis in the game, just to digest all of that as a footballer is incredible. The spatial processing, you go on.
Why do we do it then? Do you think it's to make us feel better? And I'm saying us. I'm not saying we do it.
We don't do it.
No, but I'm bringing everyone in as a
It's about being put up on a pedestal too. And look, young guys have made mistakes. They always make mistakes. And when they're, you know, given a lot of money, they've probably got more opportunity to make mistakes as well. And I think everyone likes to kind of... There's something about class involved in it too. I was pretty amazed by reading some of the.
Because as a former footballer, that's the thing, you know. And the reason I joke about you taking a long time to write your pieces is because you work very hard on them, and you're actually very hard on yourself about your pieces. But they're all brilliant, and that's the thing. Did it bother you writing this piece about footballers, and then getting this reaction as a former footballer?
I'm not sure it bothered me. I think it probably says more about the people making those comments actually than footballers. But like, stupid things like, footballers can know to use a pair of scissors. Like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you talking about there? What that says more about you than
did you
it
get
does
it when you were
football.
A player at all? Did you feel that when you
retired?
No,
I probably had a bit of imposter syndrome when I came into this industry. Like, it took a while to get rid of, but.
Realise all the sports journalists, I think.
But no, but like then, there's something about when you dedicate all your time and energy and everything to one thing, then clearly a lot of other things fall by the wayside. But now I look around and as you know, I've turned 40 this year, and some players who I played with or against or friends and stuff are now technical directors at Premier League clubs on the board of like the biggest anti-racism charity, Wes Morgan, in the UK. I've written entire syllabus for Premier League academies, our managers, our really intelligent coaches. So once you turn your attention to something else, another avenue, then you have more opportunity to sort of use your mind in a different way. So, like, I don't know. I ultimately says I think it says more about the people who think that than is anything that's true about football. As Martin, we were discussing this earlier, footballers are just a cross section of society. Slightly kind of, you know, a certain
towards athleticism, obviously.
Yeah, but a certain cross section of society, too, largely working class and like, but they're just a cross section of society. They make mistakes, but there's smart ones and there's less smart ones. So but even guys, less smart ones have got other strengths.
So you get guys that are bright and guys that are not particularly bright, and guys that would have, you know, done different things in life, with different academic opportunities, because you know you've got to remember that a lot of guys are dragged away from the academic side of life, for instance, by being good at sport, you know, and so you don't get the same opportunities as some other guys. I know plenty of footballers that would be easily smart enough to go to universities and things like that, but that wasn't. Isn't how you get into football, Johnny.
I'd say it's a generational thing as well. We forget footballers are really, really young people, and perhaps there's just an older. They are in the vanguard of what we see when we look at the young generation now. I'm going to sound really old, but I think all the stuff that maybe used to come out in, you know, music acts and all that kind of stuff. Because music's got a different place in our society now, I do think football's the thing now when an older generation just looks at things like fashion and changing behaviours and dancing after goals and wearing bits of jewellery. And a part of it is just an older generation unable to comprehend change. And cutting holes in your socks seems to me, as a 50-year-old bloke, a little bit odd, but, you know... Who am I to?
It won't anger you, though, I'm sure.
Doesn't anger me. No, amusing me. I mean, tell you the thing.
Until the kids start doing it, and you get in.
Well, what makes me think of those blokes that go around in their club's kits all the time. Have you seen them out and about? You know, in a shopping centre or whatever. I remember being in Govan once, and seeing this fella in he was a huge bloke in a full Rangers kit. So not just like the shirt and the shorts, but the shirt tucked into the shorts and the socks pulled all the way up, you know, ready for action sort of thing. And the day I see one of those guys with holes cut in the back of the socks, then football will have won.
Well, there were some good comments in among this too. There was like of a guy who says in his Vets team there are players have cut their socks.
Yeah.
And so it's not just the under-9s.
Walking
sometimes
football or something
it's
like
the 50-year-olds playing football as well.
Good. Someone's got to ask Sean Dyche about this stuff, by the way.
Well, there you go. We can find out this weekend. And if you cut holes in your socks, get in touch maybe for your 5-a-side team, for your 11-a-side team, or maybe for your walking football team, as Martin Samuel said. Get in touch with me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk. Chaps, we're going to finish with a chat about the FA Cup quarter-final round. We've got four teams that no one wants to win it. Four teams that everyone wants to win it.
Four teams that a lot of people want to win it, actually, because they're teams with a huge fan base, and I would say they all want to win it.
I'm
so,
joking. Well, I don't want them to win it.
Well,
how's
you
that?
Don't want them to win
how's
it.
That?
There we go. How about that?
Yeah. So I just wanted a brief discussion around times when a team has won the FA Cup and we've kind of cherished the moment of a kind of either a one-off winner or a winner who's not won it for a long time. Johnny, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, it has to be Leicester.
I knew you're bloody.
Oh, come on, though. I mean, I think people outside of Leicester appreciate that to that football club and the tradition of Leicester, it wasn't as significant as winning the title. Of course, nothing will ever be as significant, but Leicester were always the nearly club. They were a sort of glorious failure club, and part of that comes from the 60s when they came really close. They did come reasonably close to winning the title once, but it was more the FA Cup. They had this history with the FA Cup where they were always falling short. So for a generation, that was their ultimate dream. They couldn't conceive of winning the Premier League. To win the Premier League, and then, you know, how do you top that? Well, they did get the Champions League quarter final. That was pretty good, but to then reinvent and win the cup was just unbelievable. And having lived in the city through both, there was actually more resonance in a funny way with the FA Cup. I think just because the league was so incomprehensible to people, it's almost like that didn't really happen. But the FA Cup was something more relatable. So, you know, there was a big stuff in my daughter's school, for example, about the cup final. And it was just poetic, you know, the Wes Morgan coming on at the end.
I was so terrified he was going to score an own
goal.
I remember
he claimed
watching,
it didn't hit him. He claimed it.
I was like, oh, God.
But yeah, I was terrified as well. And his last act being to lift that trophy, the goal that Tielemans scored. So that's my, certainly of recent times.
That's a good suggestion. And I'll let that be your mic drop as you leave the studio to go and do an important interview for the weekend. Martin, your favourite nomination for a kind of one-off winner or a special winner?
The most recent one would be Wigan, surely.
Yeah.
Wigan beating Manchester City. Because the more when you're talking about things that you have to pinch yourself about them happening, Wigan beating Manchester City would be up there. And so unusual. Cheers, Johnny. And would be up there. But the age that I am, it was quite a strange thing because I saw a lot of... so I remember watching on television, and then the team that I supported did it, and I was there. A lot of teams in what is now the Championship won it when I was growing up. You know, Southampton won it, and Sunderland won it, and then West Ham won it in 1980. And so I grew up thinking, oh, that's what happens with the FA Cup. I was quite surprised. I was doing some research for a column a couple of weeks ago, and I was quite surprised at how rare that was before the 70s. It had happened once in about 50-odd years.
Mm.
And I don't know why I had it in my head that because it happened a lot when I was growing up, it must have happened a lot before as well, but it didn't really. So this is sort of fairly normal, although it's not normal to have it dominated by five or six teams. Yeah. But it's fairly normal that the elite, that the elite division wins it all the time. So Wigan, yeah, probably recently.
Come on, Wigan, come on, lads. Gregor, final shout for you.
Well, the only other one really is the Portsmouth Cardiff final. Mm,
yeah.
But Portsmouth, it kind of it was a preface to their decline, and they've spent so much money, and it's now you look back upon it and think.
But at the time, though, Harry Redknapp winning a trophy, of course, that was a big thing at the time for him and for Portsmouth, not just for Portsmouth.
Huge for Portsmouth and huge for It'd be an interesting question whether Portsmouth fans would you swap that memory for what has followed.
I think people often say, it's like Wigan, isn't it?
You think they'd keep the FA Cup and even in exchange for what came
every
after?
Every single Wigan fan that I've ever met.
Yeah,
says,
same.
Because they got relegated season. And every single Wigan fan. Because I don't think... They're the matches that create fans for generations, I think, winning the FA Cup. That creates the next generation and which in turn creates the generation after that, because you go to football with your dad or your mum and dad or your mum or whatever. And that's what creates it, that sort of those big days and everything, because, say Wigan don't win the FA Cup and they stay up that season. Do you think they would have stayed up the season after that or the season? No. Eventually they would have gone down because they were Wigan Athletic. And so you end up where you are anyway, but you've never had that day. You've never had that day that if you've seen your team win the FA Cup, it's just marvellous. And particularly now, because I know Leicester notwithstanding, but the chances are, unless you're a supporter of five or six teams, you're never going to see your team win the league.
Mm.
It's never going to happen in your lifetime. That's what is so... That's why Leicester is the greatest thing that has happened. I know people argue about Nottingham Forest and stuff like that, but Ipswich had done what Nottingham Forest did.
Mm.
Came up and won the league in their first season. Ipswich had done that within the last 15 or so years of Nottingham Forest do it. Leicester was never meant to happen.
Yeah.
So that is an absolute outlier. So, as depressing as this may sound, ladies and gentlemen, you will probably never see your team win the league unless you support five or six teams. But the FA Cup. So the FA Cup is the holy grail.
The FA Cup is the holy grail.
The majority of fans.
A lovely way to end as we head into FA Cup weekend. Wolves, Coventry, Leicester and Newcastle fans, I'll be cheering you all on, especially helpful in Wolves and Coventry because you're facing each other. To the fans of the other teams, sorry, you've had enough fun. But we'll be talking about it on Monday, I'm sure. Martin Samuel, Jonathan Northcroft and Gregor Robertson, thank you very much for joining me. We hope you enjoyed this show. From socks to FA Cup glory, we'll be back on Monday.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.